Thanks a lot. It's great to be here. Thanks a lot for the invitation, Perimeter Institute for hosting this, and also the US Federal Court in Seattle for giving me the opportunity to speak here. Okay, so today I'll be talking about, the title of the talk is Hydrodynamic Approach to Quantum Information in Chaotic Quantum Field Theories. I'll go through this word by word and give you first a 2-3 minute picture of what we will be talking about. So what do I mean by, this is working collaboration with Hong Liu and Tolio Dymarski. There are 2 papers already out. There's a 3rd coming. I'll be talking mostly about the 1st and the 3rd paper. The 1st one is a short report, and the new one will include a lot of calculations. All right, so what do I mean by quote-unquote hydrodynamic? So we're talking about some effective field theory approach. And as is usual in effective field theory, the idea is that you have a large class of theories, and you're interested in a particular regime. So you have a regime of interest, and physically you expect in this regime of interest to have a set of universal degrees of freedom that you could keep and discard the rest of the information. And then for these universal degrees of freedom, you could construct an effective field theory, right? So it will be find universal degrees of freedom, discard the rest, and construct an effective description, effective dynamics that for these universal degrees of freedom. To give you examples of this, what we have in mind, hydrodynamics is one such example where you're interested in the hydrodynamic limit as your regime of interest. And the set of universal degrees of freedom are conserved charges that survive, and everything else is irrelevant. So you just drop everything else, you construct an effective description for just conserved charges or hydrodynamic modes. They don't necessarily have to be conserved, but. Or the second example to have in mind is holography, where basically for holographic states, holographic theories, all you need, you know that there is a large class of operators that are just at large n, and in holographic states are not going to be important for you. You can just drop them and simplify your answers. That's why phenomenological approaches to ADS-CFT or ADS-CMT work so well. All right, so these are our motivations to keep in mind, and then as I go along, I'll try to make this analogy more concrete. So what do I mean by quantum information? Often in field theory, when we talk about correlators. We talk about one-point function relaxation of one-point functions, two-point functions of certain observables. But I'm talking about a large class of theories, so I don't quite know what are the observables in hand, what do you have available. So what we're going to be talking about is a unifying picture. We talk about wave functionals. Or more rigorously, I'll be talking about reduced density matrices. Once I construct the reduced sensing matrix, and I know something about it, I know I can translate into my favorite correlator. It could be one-point function, two-point function, k-point function. It could be a non-local observable, right? So it's a rather powerful thing to do, because it just you're once and forever you talk about thermalization of all observables. What do we mean by chaotic? So this is going to be the tricky part. We're going to take the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis as our working definition, or in short, ETH, as our working definition of chaos. I'll get back to this, but that's just to give you the idea. Then what do I mean by quantum field theory? For the purpose of this talk, I'll focus on conformal field theories and D plus one dimension, D dimensional space. And there are 2 reasons for focusing on this, and this class of theories. First, these theories are so symmetric that using the symmetries, I can actually have some analytic control in addressing this hard problem of eigenstate thermalization that I'll define. So if you don't have so much symmetry, it's somewhat of a hopeless problem analytically. Second, what we have in mind is that we think in our modern understanding of quantum field theory, we understand quantum field theory as the deformation of a CFD deep in the UV, and flowing along the RG flow. So this is not a very bad starting point for study, to study phenomena like ETH at the low wave functionals and quantum field theory. So we take this as a starting point of the analysis. All right, so what is the plan of the talk? So as I said, I can summarize it by saying that we'll be studying eigenstate thermalized ETH in D plus one dimensional CFDs. In these theories, we define a regime of interest, which is going to be the thermodynamic limit. We define our set of universal degrees of freedom that I'm going to call them A thermal. These are operators or observables that I'll define for you what they are. And I'll argue for you based on conformal field theory techniques that there's always such this class of operator is relevant in the thermodynamic limit and can discard the rest, and the errors that you introduce are small. So then what we do is that we take the, we look at the, so every time I write psi without no, without ket or bra, I mean a density matrix. So this is just a simplifying notation. I take the density matrix in my energy eigenstates or my states of interest. I project this guy down to the set of observables I care about, right? And this defines for me something that I call universal density matrix, psi universal. Then, if there is time, hopefully there will be time, I'll tell you about how we use this psi universal to compute various time-dependent correlators in this large class of theories. All right, so that is the plan of the talk. All right, let me start by talking about the regime of interest. So we're going to be talking about the thermodynamic limit. Take a d-dimensional CFD and quantize this on SD times RT, so D is space dimension, the number of space spatial dimensions, on a cylinder. So you're quantizing the CFD on a cylinder. Then on SD, pick a ball-shaped region where the radius of the ball is little l, and the radius of the large sphere is capital L. Okay? Now we do know if this is a Euclidean cylinder, states or particularly energy eigenstates are prepared by insertion of operators at primary operators or descendants at plus and minus infinity in the Euclidean time direction. Right? Good. So this, less for simplicity, first take it to be a primary. I'll keep track of the dimension of this primary, HA. Right? So now let's look at the thermodynamic limit. Oh, there's one more thing. So we are in conformal field theory, so there is operator state correspondence. Every state is mapped to an operator, and I'll be going back and forth between these two pictures. Sometimes I write operators, I mean states, and vice versa. Right? This is generic. So in quantum field theory, every operator gives you a state. It goes both ways, but what's neat about CFDs is that this set of operators are actually local operators. I don't need to take anything else into account. I can just classify my local operators, and I'll be good. All right, so what are my parameters? We're interested in the thermodynamic limit. Thermodynamic limit is, so I have one parameter. This is a conformal theory, so L over L is a parameter. They can't be meaningful separately. We're interested in infinite volume limit. So we're going to send L to infinity in keeping the size of the subsystem, the volume to infinity keeping the size of the subsystem fixed. So we're sending L over, well, I call them both L. I take the infinite volume limit by sending this parameter to zero. Then what we would like to have is that we would like to, so we do know that if I'm in this state, psi A, I can compute the energy density, right? Energy density in this state, psi A, is going to scale like HA times L to the power of minus D plus 1, right? As the volume goes to infinity, I'm going to get zero energy density if I keep my HA to be order 1, right? But I'm interested in finitely excited states, right? I'm interested in states that have finite energy density. So therefore, I have to send HA to infinity in this particular way, right? Such that I'm guaranteed, such that I know that I have order 1 energy density, right? So I'm decompactifying my circle, sending, taking the infinite volume limit, but increasing the dimension of the primary such that energy density is order 1. Now, as I've defined the problem now, I have only this L left in the game, so that I can set to 1, and this epsilon is a dimensional full parameter that defines for me a wavelength that I call lambda t. So this lambda t is basically energy density divided by central charge, that's for convenience, to this power. So what is the physics of this? If this were a thermal state, if I picked a thermal state of the same energy density, this up to a dimension dependent, then coefficient is going to be beta, inverse thermal wavelength.
So how do I think of this state physically? Like, what happens in that state?
It's an energy eigenstate with finite energy density. What do you mean? What happens?
Like energy density is constant in space, or is it localized in space?
Right. So, so depending on the properties of this guy, if I pick this guy to have spin, no spin, then this is going to be a translationally invariant energy eigenstate. Then if I add spin to this guy, then it will be different. I'll get back to this question. I can make sort of long wavelength perturbations as well in space. But at the moment, all I'm talking about is translationally invariant finite energy density eigenstates. All right. So let me just, so this is my thermodynamic limit. Let me tell you what the First, tell you what we're going to be showing, results, and then walk you through it. So, if I'm interested in the reduced density matrix psi, so let me define this guy once. Psi A is the reduced density matrix of this ball-shaped region. It's only a function of this parameter, right? So the first result is that I'm going to introduce a universal density matrix that only depends on epsilon and nothing else. And I show that these two guys are close in the thermodynamic limit. Oh, sorry. Now, what is this psi universal? Psi universal is defined in the following way. I can think of the density matrix as a set of operators, right? And I'm telling you that all so I have all operators in general, in full generality. You can drop all operators, keeping only the ones that live in this A thermal. And these are the coefficients that appear outside of it. L over lambda t to the power of hp, hp being the dimension of that thermodynamic relevant operator. And the fp is related to the thermal one-point function of that operator. I'll say it in a second. So actually, maybe I should come over here. So let me define what a thermal is. So the set of operators you need to keep in this thermodynamic limit are primaries that have non-zero thermal one-point functions. So say I have a theory. I have a whole a lot of operators. I'm in the thermodynamic limit. I go look at the operators that have thermal one-point function that are non-zero. I keep them. I project the density matrix to that and just discard the rest. And we're claiming, actually, we're showing that the errors are go away in the thermodynamic limit, infinite volume limit. All right.
These are
all local operators, because I'm in a CFD, so I can only use, I can reduce my analysis to only primaries, right?
What is that equation? On this side I have a trace with my density matrix of whatever I want.
That's right.
So it's a correlated. What is this one? This is literally...
So this is an operator, OP, summed over this is an operator,
right.
And this operator and this operator are the same.
Okay.
When I construct this, I'll actually tell you what exactly this is. So this is defined using a Euclidean path integral, where in the center of radial quantization you have inserted this operator.
And what's FFP?
Sorry?
FFP?
It's the, I'll define it, but it's basically the one-point function. So this guy is gonna scale like beta to minus HP times FP. That's what FP is, right? By dimensional analysis, that's how it's gonna scale. So if it's zero, this term just drops out, right? All right, let me give you some examples to have in mind. If I'm in 2D CFDs, in the thermodynamic limit, my thermal state is a cylinder. So basically, all operators drop, all zero primaries drop out, and the only thing that's left are descendants of identity, so identity zero block. So in the thermodynamic limit, in 2D CFD, all you need to keep track of is stress sensor and polynomials of stress sensor and derivatives, discard the rest, and you've introduced no errors. In hard dimensional holographic, so in hard dimensions, the story is a lot more complicated. But if I'm in a holographic state, then I expect operators like stress sensor squared, stress sensor cube, and those operators to exist. Then the claim is that all you need to keep track of are these polynomials of a stress sensor. Discard the rest, you have your universal density matrix.
Just to make sure that I understand. Even in two dimensions, if you would have global charges, like our charges, they would survive.
That's right. So I'm simplifying. So the situation of ETH, actually, I should probably say this right now. So ETH is a statement, or this state, if it has a bunch of conserved charges, it would be only fair to compare this state to the corresponding grand canonical ensemble. Right, so for simplicity, I'm taking no charges, I'll be comparing with the Gibbs state. But if I had other charges, obviously they will survive, and it will be a rather straightforward generalization of this. Now, just to advertise, if in case you lose interest halfway through, this psi universal could be used to calculate things. So we have a lot of evidence that this psi universal is relevant. For example, if I take a 2D CFD, then I can actually show psi universal minus, so this psi universal has energy density epsilon. Pick the thermal state of the same energy density and call that rho t. Reduce that to the subsystem, right? So reduce that to your subsystem of interest and call this, let's just write it. In two dimensions, we actually show that this is also zero in the thermodynamic limit. So this state is up to volume corrections, the same thing as the reduced Gibbs state. And the method to show this is actually really is information theoretic. We do not have a direct construction of showing that these two operators, at the level of operators, they do not look anything like each other. Then in higher dimensions, this state is very non-universal because it will have all sorts of higher point functions of correlators of stress tensors. So I can't really say much about this. But one thing I can do is that I can take my psi universal, compute this entanglement entropy, and compare it, assuming that the theory has the property that there are no one-point functions, thermal one-point functions for relevant operators, then I can match this up to the second order with a Ryo Takayanagi entropy of a black hole. So this is the second non-trivial check. So the first non-trivial check in two dimensions is that you show that this is directly related to a thermal state. And then the second check is in higher dimensions. We don't really have much control, but there's a nice story over there. All right, so I just made a bunch of claims. Now I have to back them up. All right. Let's now go back and start the analysis. We're going to be talking about ETH. So I better define what I mean by ETH. ETH, as defined by Chernyshevsky and Deutsch, is the following statement. Take two energy eigenstates of a many-body system, EA and EB, that are not fixed by symmetries. That's important. So they should not be related by any symmetries. In our case, that will land us on only primaries, or quasi-primaries. This guy, the diagonal piece of this matrix element, so pick an observable from a class of well-motivated observables, thermodynamically relevant observable. That, well, in the original formulation, they're a little bit agnostic about what this class of observables are, but they talk about k-point local observables, k-point low-point correlators, and so on and so forth. But because we're talking about wave functionals, we don't need to worry about this. So, but as the statement was stated first, for a class of thermodynamically relevant observables, if you look at the observable in the energy eigenbasis, the diagonal piece of it has no knowledge of the microscopic index. And the corrections to it, which are off-diagonal, or the corrections to the diagonal piece, are entropically suppressed, where E is EA plus EB over 2.
What's the subscript P in the right-hand side?
Sorry?
Is the subscript P?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. By P, I meant primary, right? I don't need to make such a statement. So in the infinite volume limit, entropy grows like volume, so this goes away, right? So you're only left with the diagonal piece and nothing else. The corrections are exponentially small. All right, so now let's talk about our CFDs, the set of theories that we're interested in. And let's ask the question of what are the operators that we can include in here. So there are two formulations of ETH you can think of. One is the weakest form that we call local ETH, which is basically the statement that if you take an energy eigenstate and perturb it by an order one small perturbation by probe primary, you expect ETH to hold, right? Just one-point functions in this excited state.
The statement here is that based on time dependence, is that the notion?
No, these are energy eigenstates, right? So the time dependence is sort of, you just take this guy and look at it in the energy eigenbasis. So it's a statement about, it is a dynamical statement, however formulated in the language of Hamiltonian. The dynamics is all hidden in this basis. It's a highly dynamical statement. So if there's anything like ETH to hold, it better hold for one-point functions. I shouldn't be able to take two energy eigenstates and distinguish them by a light probe, local probe, right? So that's the weakest form that we call local ETH, right? Now, what does that mean? Take these guys. This is OP, a light probe. Psi A is the energy eigenstate created by some operator Psi A. Psi B is an energy eigenstate that creates this guy. This is on a cylinder. I can map this to the complex plane. It's going to be LP to the power of, L to the power of minus HP CP AB, the OP coefficient, right? Now, here's an interesting statement. If you demand that this guy satisfies ETH, it basically means that this OP coefficient should have the following behavior. In the limit of HA and HB being very, very large, this should have a diagonal piece, which scales like HA to the power of HP over D plus 1, plus times FP, plus things that are exponentially suppressed. So local ETH could be translated to the existence of a limit of OP coefficient CPAB when the dimension of A and B go to infinity. Right? So this could be made, this constraint, local ETH, could be written down as a sharp statement in the language of CFD data. Now, there's another form of ETH you could define that we call, which is the strongest form, that we call subsystem ETH. It's basically the best you could hope for, which is 1-point functions, 2-point functions, 3-point functions, arbitrary point functions, and all non-local operators that have support on a finite region of space will satisfy ETH. So if I'm talking about all operators, I can just talk about wave functionals and reduce density matrices. So define the look at the reduced density matrix B of the psi A reduces subsystem B, or I can write it L over lambda T. The statement of local ETH, subsystem ETH, is that there exists a universal density matrix that has no knowledge of A. That's close to this guy. The difference between them vanishes in the infinite volume limit. So I can basically take this particular microstate and project it down, well, actually, as I'm stating it, there exists a state that has no knowledge of the microstate that's arbitrarily close. This is like the diagonal piece. I think I did not manage this well. So this is like the diagonal piece. I can also do something for the off-diagonal piece, which is define sigma AB to be trace of B complement of EA EB. Then you expect the second condition would be sigma AB with some arbitrary phase alpha plus its Hermitian conjugate should be exponentially, should be 1 over L suppressed. These are, by the way, trace distance. So it means that they are close in the Hilbert space. There is no, I'm not hiding any magic behind this. All right, so I guess I can now quote an important result that we have, that in CFDs of arbitrary dimension, the weakest form, local ETH, implies the strongest form, which is subsystem ETH. You either have no ETH at all, or you have it for all operators. All right. Are there questions?
Yes. Basic question about Hayes variable. So if you consider high dimensional holographic theory, mm-hmm. Or even in that case, if you consider it like a holographic theory with some light scalars, I guess you also need to include those light scalars.
Right. So that's right. So this is like, so I give the example of holographic theory is that these microstates of a black hole, mm-hmm. right? Now, obviously, we're thinking about this as a phenomenological approach. If you know that there are other operators that have one point function, you have to include them in the sum, right? And then you run this machinery, and your answer pops out. So our philosophy is that, say, you come to me and say, my theory is not holographic, it's some complicated theory, but I know that operator 1, 2, 3 have non-zero thermal one-point functions. Then I'll tell you that phenomenologically, a good guess to start with would be construct this guy and compute time-dependent correlators. Right? In that case, we don't really have any support that this is close to actual density matrix or something. But that's, it's a hopeless problem. We're actually proposing some first guess, right? So in the theories that, let me stop at this point.
So then suppose you have like stringy modes, which are very massive and you're discarding in holographic theory. Can you say that, for example, the one-point function of those modes are suppressed by one over dimension of that operator?
Yeah, we would like to make statements of that type. But our first order statement is just like discard them first, right? Now, if you want to keep track of more information, then we can, Notice that, although I mentioned holography, but I'm motivating a different thermodynamic. So there are two types of thermodynamic limits. By thermodynamic limit, I mean some sort of large parameter that imposes Gaussian or imposes some sort of law of large numbers. I can do that via infinite volume limit, or I can do it by infinite number of local degrees of freedom, like n. The way I'm discussing it, I'm more focusing on infinite volume limit, but I'll draw analogies with holography. Yes?
I want to ask these coefficients fp, the one-point functions. In your approach, are you taking them as some additional arbitrary parameter, or they're fixed in terms of the CFT data infraspace?
That's something that comes out of the CFT data.
So they are a function of all the data you have infraspace?
Yeah, there's a priori a higher dimensional CFT, three-dimensional, four-dimensional. There's no principle that fixes for me a one-point function, thermal one-point function. That's a free parameter. I do not know anything about it. So if I'm constructing an effective field theory, effective description, there are some inputs, right? So this is an input.
Okay, so for you, there are additional arbitrary parameters.
Well, the one-point function of thermal one-point functions.
Okay.
All right.
Yes. I probably just missed it, but there's some kind of bound, or what is HP doing?
Oh, HP is just some order one operator.
But that's it. It's order one.
It's just order one. The only thing that matters is order one. Yeah. Because the philosophy is that you take an energy eigenstate, you're banging on this, and the energy that you inject should be order one. Right? If you insert something that changes your puts energy that scales with volume, then you don't expect anything like ETH. All right. So now I said a lot of words, and let me try to provide more CFT analysis. So first thing is, turns out that there is a way of thinking, so this is some sort of universality, right? This is a universality. I'm telling you that it could keep this thermodynamically relevant operator and discard the rest. Let me give you some argument why this universality is good, as why you should think about it, why such a thing is plausible, or why it holds. First, map your cylinder to the complex plane, by which I mean actually RD plus 1. Yeah, higher dimensional plane. Then the operator that created your state, psi A, is going to be the center of radial quantization. And the operator that annihilates the state is going to be at infinity. Now your subsystem is going to be this small, tiny ball-shaped region on this sphere that has size L over L, right? So you can think about it, has radius L over L. Good. Now, this is a conformal theory. We're talking about conformal theory. I can make conformal transformations, and they're understood as unitaries, right? So I have to construct a reduced sensing matrix here, psi of A of B, or L over lambda T. I'll have to perform a path integral over the complex plane, or RD plus 1, with a cut above and below this region, with two operating insertions. Right? This is what my psi A is. Or I can actually apply a unitary to this guy and map it to a more convenient set of coordinates. The more convenient coordinates looks like the Rindler space. So what you do is that you take this, actually, thanks to Rob and his collaborators, we know that there exists such that who wrote down explicitly this map. You can map this ball-shaped region to a Rindler space. So here's a Rindler space. This region is mapped to, so let me say this is x naught, this is x1, and all the xi's are perpendicular. This subsystem is mapped to the negative x1 plane. So the cut above and below are like a cut above and below this. Now, this, the vector field that generates this transformation is basically opened up into this transformation. The operators psi A and psi A dagger are on the unit circle, sorry, on the unit circle at these points, e to the power of I L over L and e to the power of, well, minus. Now here comes the important part of the analysis. In the thermodynamic limit, as you can see, this goes to zero, these two operators are colliding. The two operators are colliding. If the dimension of the primary doesn't grow fast enough, I guess just vacuum. I just get identity and there are no corrections because the distance is vanishing. I'm gonna write down the primary in a second. If the distance grows too fast, you're violating unitarity. There's just a sweet region in between where certain terms that have one point function, thermal one point function survive and the other ones disappear. And this is what's that's what's responsible for the universality in the thermodynamic limit in these theories. So let me write down what I just said. So the reduced sensing matrix is going to be this guy. You have to normalize your density matrix. These are the same points. So you write the OPE. There's going to be CPAA BOP. Now, this parameter is going to zero. This is growing with HA. If I have my local ETH condition, then they will compete, and the terms that have non-zero FP will survive, the rest will drop out. Nothing can grow faster because it violates unitarity. So basically in this sum, in the limit of L going to infinity and HA scaling, as I argued for in the thermodynamic limit, the only thing that comes out are basically, so the result of, so this is gonna turn into a sum over P over A thermal FP L over lambda T to the power of HP OP. Right? I'm gonna repeat that again. So in the HA goes to infinity, this goes to zero, they're competing. If I have a local condition, local ETH condition, or as I advertise the growth of HA such that I have energy density order one, only the terms that have non-zero one-point function, thermal one-point functions survive. And when I say non-zero thermal one-point function, I'm assuming the equivalence of the canonical and microcanonical ensemble. This guy is actually the microcanonical one-point function, but it's much easier to talk about the thermal one. Now, I have this operator, I just map all the way back, I come back here, the statement is that there exists a psi universal that has no, notice that there's no HAA index here. The microscopic index went away, right? The statement is that psi universal is constructed by doing the path integral with psi A and psi A dagger removed, with that operator inserted at the center, appropriately conformally transformed. Right? So here is a very precise prescription for constructing the psi universal. It's defined using that insertion of that operator in the center of radial quantization. This is a density matrix, and we can, as I just argued for you, if you have local ETH, the reduced density matrices are closed. Now, you might tell me that, oh, these are closed in this basis, but the trace distance closeness is unitarily invariant. So if I have rho minus sigma, this is equal to this. So there's another point that I have to say. I just showed that the form of the operators are closed, are similar. I haven't argued for you what the trace distance is. So we use quantum information theory to take care of that part. So this trace distance is bounded above by this quantity called relative entropy. There's a replica trick for relative entropy. There's a, if you break the Zn symmetry of the normal replica trick, you construct a replica trick for relative entropy. And using that, you bound that, the relative entropy, hence you bound this using the so-called Pinsker inequality. Those are technicalities, you don't need to worry about them. But you use Pinsker inequality and computation of relative entropy to bound this quantity. So now let's step back and see whether we should be surprised by this statement and what have we achieved. If I'm assuming local ETH, I know that one-point functions, I know that the three-point functions have a fixed behavior, right? So if I go to k-point function, two-point function, three-point function in this energy eigenstate, I should be able to recursively use conformal algebra and replace each of these guys with their thermal value. So it's not all that crazy that this method works. So what have we accomplished? We've accomplished the fact that as you repetitively use this OPE, the errors do not accumulate, point one. Second, non-local operators follow the same logic. So using this OPE, I cannot really do non-local operators, but once and forever, this is established. As we have, the density matrices are closed, so everything is closed. All right, so I'll, in the remaining time, I'll give examples. So let's talk about CFT2, which is going to be the first example. So now I have to tell you one more thing. This psi universal that we constructed is not just a formal construction. We could actually use this to compute things. And if I have time, well, I'll tell you some examples. But as we go along, I'll hopefully convince you that this is actually, this could be used for approximately or phenomenologically calculating certain things, certain quantities. So in a two-dimensional CFD, the only operator, as I just said, the only operators that have non-zero thermal one-point functions are stress sensor and its descendants. So if I want to construct psi universal, I know exactly how to do this. Here is the result. It's the sum over non-negative integers of 2L over 2 pi, 2 square root pi lambda t. This convention is for convenience. C to the power of k over d to the power of 2k, curly t to the power of k, multiplied by Hermitian conjugate. So, oh, I'm sorry. So whatever operator, this is the universal density matrix is defined using this quantity. So now I have to tell you what these curly tau 2k and d2k are. So first of all, d2k is just the norm of this curly t2k. These are quasi-primaries of stress sensor that have t to the power of k in them. So at each level, 2k, there are several quasi-primary. First of all, there are there's nothing on odd levels. They just drop out. If you go to even levels, then you have, for example, operator t squared, which is like this. So let's go slower. At k equal 1, you only have one quasi-primary, t. I'm talking about the holomorphic sector. At k equal 2, you have tt, and you have del squared of t. Now you can, these are not separately quasi-primaries. You have to write down linear composition of them. there is one of these guys at each level that survives. And that's the one that has t to the power of k. I can write down the first few ones. So the second one is going to be, so t4 is going to be tt minus 3 over 10. t6 is going to be tt plus 9, 14, c, plus 43, over 2, 70, c, plus 29, del t, del t, plus da, da, da. So you can just write a simple mathematical code that just generates these guys to your favorite order, and you construct this operator to your favorite order. Okay, so as a sum operator, can we show what can we do with this? So first thing you could do is that you could compute this Renyi entropies. So you compute the Renyi entropy of psi universal perturbatively in this small parameter. This is, by the way, a small temperature expansion. But because it's a conformal field theory and the expansion is convergent, so you can reconstruct, in principle, arbitrary temperature results from this. And as a matter of fact, as you can see, well, maybe I might not get there, but if you further take a large center charge limit, the whole sum exponentiates. So you compute this, it's gonna look like, you can compute, well actually let me not write it down. Well, I'll just write down some form of it. So we compute this guy in perturbation. So there is gonna be L over lambda t to the power of 2, L over lambda t to the power of 4, and da, da, da. Cardian calibrancy for us computed the Renyi entropies, by delta I mean vacuum subtracted, by the way, for that reduced sensing matrix in the thermal state. So I should write trace of B rho T. You write that down here, you compare them, they do not match. That's okay, as n goes to 1, they do match, so entanglement entropies are the same. And that is enough to know that these two density matrices are close in trace distance. This is a funny fact about quantum field theory, that two states could be arbitrarily close in the Hilbert space and have Renyis that are order one different. So how do you see this is they're close in the Hilbert space? The argument is very simple. You look at the relative entropy, which is a measure of distinguishability of these two guys. This could be thought of as the difference in expectation value of the modular operator of this rho t minus delta s. I just told you that delta s is 0. Delta ht for this particular state is a simple integral stress tensor. But I tune the two states to have the same energy density. So this goes away as well. So goes away means that this is 1 over L suppressed. If the relative entropy is small, the trace distance is small from Pinsker inequality. So although the operator as expanded looks nothing like the reduced sensing matrix of a Gibbs state, but they actually are close in the Hilbert space. All right. Let's work at a higher dimensional example.
So your thermal density matrix has temperature.
Right.
So your first line does not have temperature.
Right, so I have lambda t here, and that has beta, right? Beta and lambda t in
but lambda t can energy density of temperature.
That's right. So at
so what's the relation between energy and temperature?
In two dimensions, in arbitrary dimension actually, if you fix the temperature for me, I can read off the energy density, right? So in two dimensions, this is universal. I can write down the how you go in between the two. In higher than two dimensions, this depends on a vacuum, a Casimir energy of, in that particular dimension. But that is also theory independent. So beta and lambda t, you just match them by comparison. In two dimensions, you can just write down explicitly how they are related. I can show it to you later. All right. So let's.
Did k start at 0 or 1?
Oh, 1. Sorry, as 0. So there's.
Oh,
yeah.
Start at 0. Okay.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, there's a 1 plus this So the density matrix looks like 1 plus stress tensor plus stress tensor squared, da da da. Okay. So the two-dimensional case arguably might not be the most interesting. We're more interested in the higher dimensional situations where we do not have much analytic control. So let's try to construct psi universal. Well, obviously, the set of operators that have non-zero thermal one-point functions are not known. It depends on the theory. I'm willing to make assumptions. Oh, by the way, I have to say, this whole story was finite central charge. Nowhere in this story I assumed anything like large central charge. I'm going to make the assumption that no relevant deformation, no relevant for all OP relevant operators, FP is zero. No relevant operator has one-point functions that are zero. Okay. Then in my expansion, I know at least the first few terms. I know this term, which is due to the stress tensor, some particular vector that we do know, T mu nu plus da da da. So I'm expanding this psi universal in operator dimension. There will be stress tensor if there are no relevant operators before. Okay, so what can I do? Yes.
That's just an assumption. That's the class of theories you're going
to assume. Absolutely. That's right. This is a class of theories that I'm assuming. Then I can use the replica trick and compute the, I can only compute the entanglement entropy for this guy. I can compute the entanglement entropy to an arbitrary dimension using this assumption at finite central charge. And this is the expression. I can only go to the order t squared because that's the how much information I have. Dt is the central charge, by the way. The two-point function defined by the two-point function of stress tensor. That's what I mean by central charge here. So whatever sits here will crucially depend on non-universal data, three-point function of stress tensor, other primary operators, so on and so forth. So up to here, I'm fine with this assumption, right? So now I want to see if this density matrix, psi universal, is actually related to anything I know. Well, we do not know what the thermal entanglement entropy is. The entanglement entropy of a reduced density matrix in a thermal state is. But if I have a holographic theory, I can use Ryu Takanagi in a black hole background to calculate delta S. And to this order, they do match. So we check that this is actually, even though there is no large N or anything, to this order, they do match. Should you be surprised? I think some the analysis that we've done before using canonical energy, blah, 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 Fisher information, we could have used that to guess this, but this is a neat result that works in all dimensions. Now, what about going to higher orders? Here's what the philosophy is. Say I'm going to set all the operators to equal to the one-point function of all non-stress sensor operators equal to zero. I'm going to keep only polynomials of a stress sensor, right? This is just one assumption. I'm going to assume that there are only polynomials of a stress sensor here. Then what appears at the next order is three-point function of stress sensor that have three free parameters in arbitrary dimensions. And then I can get rid of one of them by, one of them is actually not independent. And the other two I can would correspond to the black hole with higher derivative theories. So I take a finite central charge theory, I make assumptions about one-point thermal functions. I could reverse engineer a gravity solution, a black hole solution, that will reproduce the same entanglement entropy. Notice that nowhere we're claiming anything like a duality. This is a phenomenological approach that works like a charm. And it's just the reason for that is the universality. We're at finite central charge here, right? But somehow you could use gravity to compute things by reverse engineering the gravitational theory, right? For example, obviously on this side, you could pick the coefficients or theories that in this side will violate unitarity or something horrible in the bulk. But we don't care about that. We use this as a trick to compute it. All right. Maybe I should pause here, and then in the remaining time, we'll talk about time-dependent calculations. Are there questions? So hopefully I argued for you that psi universal is a legitimate good first guess. Well, in CFDs, that holographic CFDs or two-dimensional CFDs, we can show this. But in full generality, it's our what we're putting forward is phenomenologically. Now, in the remaining time, I want to connect with time-dependent phenomena and hydrodynamics. Okay, so far all we talked about is just this psi universal, identifying universal degrees of freedom and truncating to them, right? Nowhere I talked about time dependence or anything. So energy eigenstates are highly unphysical in the sense that most systems you see in nature are not in energy eigenstates, right? They have time dependence or space dependence that might be long wavelength or long time scales. What you can do is that if I go to my original my calculation, which was a radial quantization, I inserted an operator in the center. If I push this operator off center, what I've created is some initial distribution of energy that is time dependent and space dependent, right? I can push this also. If I push this very close, it will be a limit of a local quench. But if I keep it somewhere in here, I'm looking at long wavelength perturbation to a thermal state. You run your machinery, you still have the same result, and you find something very, very physical, which is same analysis holds, psi universal or the thermal reduced density matrix is still relevant when you're talking about systems that have time dependence or spatial dependence that are long wavelength. So as long as your subsystem is much smaller than the thermal wavelength, you still have this universal density matrix. Right? So this is quote-unquote local equilibrium, local thermalization. Then you can play another game. I'm just going to say it in words. You can take energy eigenstates and superpose them. Right? You superpose these guys, you calculate entanglement entropy, and you observe that as long as you do not superpose, the number of eigenstates that you superpose does not scale like the dimension of the Hilbert space. You're actually still landing on the universal density matrix. So it doesn't matter if I pick states that are very, very, like energy eigenstates that are very different, put all sorts of phases, it doesn't matter. There's still the same argument goes through. The only situation to get some genuine time dependence at small scales is that I overlap, I superpose a lot of the order of the energy of the entropy of the, sorry, dimension of the Hilbert space of these energy eigenstates. How much time do I have, actually?
Five more minutes.
All right. So I just say in words what we are doing next. So I said all this to say that now we're pushing. Now that we have psi universal, we want to actually use this to compute things. So what are the things that we're going to compute? We can look at time dependent correlators. Say time dependent 2-point function. We can compute that. But what's more interesting for us is a setup like this. So here's your radial quantization. This prepares for you the energy eigenstate. Now, what we're going to do is that we're going to perturb this energy eigenstate or thermal state with another operator, a light operator now, right? And by tuning this distance, I can make this a local quench, or I can make this a long wavelength perturbation. If I'm in the long wavelength perturbation, we're hoping to reconstruct the theory over here, and it looks like a quote-unquote hydrodynamics. If I go to a local quench limit, where you look at the, you try to reconstruct how a thermal state responds to a local quench, how the entanglement entropy of a thermal state changes as a function of time, in higher dimensions, something that's not accessible to us with all the known techniques at the moment using CFD tricks. But we do know that from gravity that in different dimensions there are various velocities that are relevant. So we're trying to set up all sorts of different applications that we could think of initially to push this further. I think, let me just summarize by saying that I talked about eigenstate thermalization in the context of CFDs. All the known integrable CFDs, free theories and minimal models, they fail local ETH. All that, the ones that we have tested. So if a theory, if a CFD passes local ETH, it achieves ETH for all operators, that's what we showed. Then we discussed the thermodynamic limit, the set of relevant degrees of freedom, the so-called universal density matrix, and hopefully we're gonna be using this to do all sorts of calculations. I'm gonna stop here. Thanks so much.
In the expansion that you wrote, you know, black to define that one. So you said the next order is really the
next. If I assume there are no other non-stress tensor operators that appear.
And what is the next to next?
Well, it would be a four-point function. And then T squared, right. So a generic CFD will not have a T squared operator.
Right.
So a holographic theory does, but a generic CFD we don't really know. So you could again pick your favorite theory, try to reverse engineer something here, and just by counting of the number of available parameters, you wouldn't be surprised that it actually works.
Mm-hmm.
Just that you have the same number of degrees of freedom here. So you can tune them.
So you're saying that second term contains both the two-point function and T squared?
So no, the T squared would be a T squared operator in vacuum, which would vanish.
Oh, right.
So this only contains two-point function stress tensor. That's why it's still universal. As I go, this was a finite central charge, right? So I don't necessarily have this operator.
Okay. Did you have to assume that if I had an irrelevant operator, but the dimension wasn't too large, would it interfere with your series, or is the one-point function automatically zero?
So if I have an operator that's irrelevant, that has dimension larger than D, everything up to, and I'm including it, up to here, everything is fine. That operator appears at 2D, which is past this. D plus one, sorry. In my notation, D plus one. So, because it's at order HP, only the one-point function of this operator appears, that vanishes. Then to find something non-zero, you have to go to the two-point function of this guy, which is ordered 2 times D+1.
Okay.
2 times HP, sorry.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.